This movie fucking sucks.
Thank you. Wait, I thought I was going to be like having to be like, no, this is the worst movie. And you guys being like, you just don't understand.
No, it's bad.
No, this is a piece of trash movie. And that's why I love it.
Okay.
Oh, no. See, I fucking hate it. I hate this movie.
So you've seen this before, Steve?
Yeah, I have. And
what, just once or?
I saw it once when I was younger.
How young?
I don't know, like high school or or something.
Okay.
And watching it now, like I remember all that shit. I remember everything about it. And so I had like this weird kind of perception of this movie because I remember all of like the violence and the exploitation, the sadism and all that shit. But then I remember reading things and hearing things and listening to people talk about it, this movie on podcasts and YouTube and whatever the fuck, Joe Bob and shit, and but not having rewatched it. And so kind of having this like idea that it was this like shitty exploitation film that did have like some artistic value and shit that it was like trying to say or like explore themes to explore, and then I rewatched it and it was just trash.
And you
it
were
was
like, boring. No, not happening.
Yeah, no, there's like the one scene where it's like, oh, this is art, you critics, and it's like, okay, and then it's just the rest, and then it was just bad. And so like there is like a movie that could be made theoretically with all these points about like the fucking critique of horror as like a meta thing, and that's something that we can get into when we actually start talking about this movie. But like, I just fucking hated this. This has actually been like the worst thing I've watched for this podcast. So this is worse than Veronica.
Me and Steve were gonna like brawl this week. So
no.
Okay, good. Let's team up on Scott.
I love shit like this. This movie is morally bankrupt. It has no purpose other than to just be garbage. And I'm okay with that because it knows it's garbage. And I appreciate when a film knows that other than a movie like we kind of were joking about on the After Hours episode we recorded about the new Texas Chainsaw movie. Like, that, I think, thinks it's trying to say something. This isn't trying to say anything. This is just like an excuse for a guy that used to do smut films to do a movie that had a lot of fucking bush and titties in it. And
yeah,
really, really brutally bad deaths.
Did you see the picture Scott was tweeting of me, Steve? Watching this movie,
I just kept watching her
like
die.
I have him blocked, so no.
It was a saga of just like
I saw some. I saw you commenting on about the size of several actresses' areolas.
I said one. I liked the tits. The tits were nice. I enjoyed the bush. The bushes were great.
Here's one thing.
You have a thing for 70s.
Yeah.
The female 70s form. I do. Yeah.
So what's the deal? They didn't invent asses until 1987?
Basically. Yes.
Like, do you ever notice that? There's no ass in 70s
movies.
Do
you know why, though? Because that was the look. That was during that, like, skinny, slinky, like, twiggy, like, was popular. Well, it was a little before, but that was, like, still a thing. Like, the skinny girl, like, appeal.
Yeah.
And flat and asses were like not a thing. And it's weird because my mom will always say something like, you got a big butt. Like, I'm sorry I gave that, you know, whatever. And I'm like, sorry.
No apologies necessary.
Like, what are you talking about? Well, it's big and long.
It's long.
But
it's
yeah. Long, yeah. But like, our parents like think that having a big ass is like a bad thing because that was the vibe back then.
We also let's be honest, you know, we have asses made through food preservatives and shit. We're like, These are genetically modified booties now, which is wonderful. I mean, thank you, science.
It's just the womanly expectation has changed, and it will change again. It's just whatever society says, that's what it is. I'll have a long butt till the day I die. You know, nothing I can do about that. But I think that's why nobody had an ass, like, because that was the type of woman they were looking for.
The one broad that was, like, one of his, like, torture assistants was, like, like had like she was just like a rail and like muscular. It was very like
she was real
off-putting.
She was real skinny. Yeah.
I guess we should probably just talk about what actual movie, you know, we're talking about today.
No, it's a surprise. Wait till the end.
Well, now that it's all over, end of February, Lupercalia, it's come to an end. The celebration of blood, breasts, and beasts. We're no longer going to be commemorating it after this week, but we're going to finish by using a film that embodies the totality of its unabashed horniness and depravity. So if you couldn't figure it out, Bloodsucking Freaks is the film we are doing this week. Jenna and Steve clearly both hate this movie.
Trash.
Bad.
Boo!
I think this movie is incredibly entertaining, and the fact that, like I said, it's completely pointless.
If you like this movie, you need to go to therapy immediately.
I want to kill this movie with a gun.
That's a red flag.
Okay, well, I guess we'll jump into this right about now. All right.
Damn, a 6-minute intro, that was sick.
I know, right? Originally released in 1976 under the title The Incredible Torture Show during its original theatrical run, and re-released in 1981 by none other than Troma Entertainment, Bloodsucking Freaks is considered by many to be one of the most notorious splatter exploitation films of the 1970s, its notoriety further sustained by the deaths of two of its stars after the fact as well. Lloyd Kaufman has specifically said in interviews that, to quote him, "I may have possibly secured my place in hell just by watching this movie. Today, we would not have anything to do with it at Troma." So this is how bad this fucking movie is.
Even
is that
Troma doesn't want to claim
even
it.
Even Uncle Lloydie is like,
"Oh my,
I'm going to hell because we put this movie
and
out.
You made me watch this?"
Yeah. The fun for me was watching you watch this movie.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I wish I could have like live streamed you just slamming beers and just like slowly sinking into the chair covered in blankets.
I was
like
literally pulling the hood over my head and tying the string tighter and tighter and tighter so that just my eyes were showing at one point.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Except I'm not, because it was fun. Mm-hmm. To get back on the Troma thing real quick, though, they got in a little trouble when they did re-release this movie. So they were going to get it cut to get an R rating, but instead just put the actual R rating logo on all their posters, which is a no-no. So they got sued by the MPAA when they actually re-released the movie.
Oh, because it didn't actually get rated?
Yeah.
So they just
another reason why Uncle Lloyd is going to hell.
It'd be like me going on Canva and being like, R-rated, and printing out a poster.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be, it's different, because like you're not like selling that thing.
But if I was?
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah, essentially. Like, God. Yeah, so, you know, it's Troma. Uncle Lloydie is a little bit of a shyster at times, as we've learned.
Oh, can you say that?
Shyster?
I get it. Just move on.
I'm just thinking, is that a slur? I'm trying.
Could be.
Really feels like one. It's got the mouth. It's got the mouth feel of a slur.
It does, yes.
Well, it would be me that would accidentally throw a slur into an episode. Anything I say just sounds awful.
You know, I was watching, I'm about to say a slur, but it's not a bad one. That bad of a one. That's a fucked up thing to say. It's a bad one, but it's not that bad, I guess. I had a friend, and we were watching some movie or whatever, and there was an Asian guy, and he called the guy. He was just like saying it like normally, and he just called him a zipperhead.
God.
And so we all recoiled. Everyone that was watching, we're like, holy shit, especially because this guy isn't like. He doesn't say slurs. So we're all like, oh my God. And he goes, what? And we're like, that's like a slur for whatever, the Vietnamese, whatever the fuck.
That's a big Clint Eastwood energy word. Really.
Exactly. Yes. He goes, yeah, but that's what my grandpa used to call them.
Yeah, like, that's your first inkling that it's no good.
Oh, yeah. Anything.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. And which war was your grandfather in?
Oh my God. I mean, the fact that he didn't know that is just like.
Yeah,
I cannot.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
really cool guy.
It's really cool.
So, blood-sucking freaks, as we're talking about, and not Asian-American slurs and a possible Jewish slur that I used. An exercise in bad taste and vulgarity, to say the very least. Blood-sucking freaks' ample use of violence against women, themselves prominently displayed in the nude and degraded throughout the film, and utilizing amputations, decapitation, tooth extractions, electrically charged nipple clamping, skull crushing, chainsawing, caning, backgammon finger gambling, eye popping, brain sucking, and a myriad of other lowbrow torture techniques, the film, unshockingly, was a target of numerous campaigns ranging from religious groups to radical feminists working to have the film removed from circulation across the grindhouse circuit and also through VHS distribution.
Here's the thing about that. Do I think
hit me?
No, I just think like
give us some big femme energy right now.
I agree that I don't. It's not very appealing towards women whatsoever. But it's like I don't agree with the whole take it down. Like it's like there's a million freaking the government isn't pro feminism. It's like what are we gonna do? Burn it all down? Like that's the option. Well, sure, but it's like I don't know. I don't agree with targeting things like that. I don't like this movie either. I would lean more to the side to say, get it the fuck out of here. But I have the option of not watching it. So I'll go with that.
It's not like this movie was played in every single movie theater across the U.S.
Right, and also
too,
like, like how your kid's going to get its hands on this? Like, that's if you own it. Like, that's on you then. Like,
yeah. We're going to have like a special bookshelf with like a lock.
Yeah.
Or like a grate that
they
can't open.
It's like when they tried to censor like songs and the radio and all that stuff. It's when that whole thing came out.
Tipper Gore, you bitch.
It's just like, again, like then don't, I don't know. You know how I feel about all that.
Well, it's also during, and we'll get into this surprisingly or unsurprisingly if this movie is like, this is also during a time when like stag films and adult films were like, you could walk down a street in New York City and there'd be 15 theaters showing smut films.
And that's on you.
Yeah.
That's on you to take your happy ass in there and do whatever you do.
Well, if you're Pee Wee Herman, you get caught. Oh. Yeah. You didn't know, did you know that?
I feel like I forget every time you tell me.
Yeah.
I put that down deep somewhere.
Yeah, but like this is also like, you can talk about this a lot of like exploitation films of like guys really taking advantage of the fact that like, it's not hard to pay somebody some money to show their tits and get railed, you know? So a movie like this, like, it's not... This is, like, also, like, the start of a time when people were really starting to get against pornography because you have movies that are, like, bawdy, and then you have movies like this, which are... Yeah. And I will go to my grave swearing this is a fucking comedy, but it's... It's bad. Like, you know, this is kind of when you start wondering... If, you know, certain individuals' depravity kind of really, like, hit their zenith during the 70s. Like, this shit that was coming out and stuff, you know? For fuck's sake, this is when Deep Throat came out, you know?
Yeah, but Deep Throat's a fucking porno. It's explicitly a porno, you know? Like, I think that the difficulty here is, right, like, this fight... It's like freedom of speech fight, essentially, in order to be able to say whatever you want with impunity, to get past censors, right? The 70s was part of this like transformative thing, right? Like the 60s, you finally start breaking into films and shit that are like breaking outside of the various codes and structures of like the studio system of the 50s. And so the 60s, you kind of have that, and then it moves into the 70s. In the 70s, you start getting like two things. One, things become experimental, which is where you get like a lot of your new Hollywood kind of guys who, you know, some people might say, what's the difference between this movie and a Brian De Palma movie?
A budget and a better script.
Basically. It obviously more, but you see the point there. And then there's also the fact that this is like one of the many stages in which you start, for lack of a better phrase, like you start getting like the democratization of movie making. It's not like the shot on VHS boom of the 80s and 90s, but it's definitely a lot easier to go rent a camera and have some fucking random guys be able to start making a movie with a little budget. All you need to do is get like one guy to put out some money for you. And there's lots of guys out there who can, you know, give you 300 grand in the 70s so you can shoot this fucking movie. Like, so the point with all of this is it's like, I get that fight supposedly, and I get what this is supposed to do, but at the end of the day, you have movies like this that are just nothing. It's nothing. I know that sounds kind of trite, but I mean, it's just like, it's bereft of any sort of content. And so it's one of those things where,
I mean, this is it's like legitimately one of the first like torture porn, films. Like, I know we talk about that sometimes when we talk about like Saw and some of the, you know, the 2000s Rob Zombie films, but
Hostel, Saw, all those.
Don't talk about Hostel, please.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on certain things. I think the problem when we talk about freedom of speech is I have two things. I think that as a viewer, a listener, whatever, you do kind of, and we've talked about this on After Hours. By the way, you'll get to listen to those even if you're not part of the Patreon, just a couple weeks removed from where we do them. We have a big talk about this. But one of those things is that, like, you have to have the accountability. Like, if you see a movie that says blood-sucking freaks, like, you kind of got to assume you're walking into something that might challenge you, even if it is completely bereft of anything besides being a bunch of women being tortured. Right. At the same time, too, like, yeah, I mean, I agree that you could be able to do this stuff, but also, like, these are also the movies that become the straw man arguments for being like, well, we can't have freedom of speech when this is not a big film. This is not an important movie. This isn't, it's just garbage. So when movies like this get used as an example for that, I think it just ruins the argument against them because these aren't.
It didn't make the impact that people act like it.
And I think that's why Jenna and I are probably in like an extremely small minority where we are people that think this is a bad movie but are not offended by it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm not offended. Like, live,
like,
go ahead. I don't care. Would choose to not watch that again because I kept repeating I feel ill.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The effects. The effects were trash, right? They looked fake. I could handle that. It was the thought. It was the idea. It was the idea of what it was. And I was just like, no, thank you. But it's like,
I felt more gross for like the kind of meta reality of like, oh, what are these girls got probably paid in a forced blowjob and a hot dog for like each day of filming to
like
fucking debase themselves.
Making of the movie.
Yeah. And so like, I'm not like a huge fucking social justice crusader on that, but like there is some things where you see like, and it's like you did, you know, it's kind of that thing. You ever see like a really shitty movie and you see like you're getting ready. I mean, this movie, like all the tits are just out. Like very rarely do you see like
from
tits
from the get go.
Yeah. Do you, very rarely do you
female
see
female wardrobe.
Yeah. There's very, very, very few times what you actually see like, I'm taking this shirt off. It's just like tit. Tit, tit, tit. And so. Tit, 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 tit.
Hey, honey, you want to be a star? Come over here. Have a hot dog, suck my dick, and I'm going to put you in a film called Blood Sucking Freaks.
Oh, my God.
But, like, you can see in, like, a lot of lower budget movies, like, when, like, a woman might be about to take your clothes off, you have that, oh honey, not for this movie moment, you know what I mean? And so there's like that for this and the entirety of this movie, but to backtrack slightly to that point, I think this is one of those things where I think the accountability goes both ways though, right? I mean, like, yes, the censorship account, it's what to protect the public because you don't think the public can protect themselves, blah blah blah, bad, not good. But there should also be accountability for the people speaking, right? It's the same thing, and I'm not saying that this is similar, but it's the whole like it's not freedom of speech to shout fire in a crowded movie theater.
Yeah.
It's not to say that this movie is shouting fire in a crowded movie theater, but there is also this seeming entitlement for both people that create these movies and people that like them. You know, like extremely online, like kind of like horror, quote unquote horror community type people who just like love stupid movies like this as think it's a personality. Like,
for the record, that, this is not the only aspect of my personality. I'm also deranged in other ways as well.
I can confirm.
I'm nice.
yeah. Okay.
But like, it's that same shit where if you don't like this movie, somehow you're it's like you're affronting someone's freedom of speech. It's like,
yeah, and that's silly.
It's like, yeah, Nazis have the freedom of speech to go and spout their bullshit, but like, that's why everyone also doesn't have to like not think that you're a fucking idiot piece of shit moron like fascist dipshit.
Like, well, I think too, when you're talking about censorship in a way, is like by having accountability, you don't have censorship in a way. Yeah. Because like, if you have to be accountable, then clearly what you have created is not inherently being censored or it's not being released, because if you're being accountable, you've at least somehow been accused of something or have to have a means of defending what you've created for whatever merit it is. So that's kind of one of those kind of weird arguments that people don't seem to think about when they talk, because they strictly just think First Amendment rights. Like, again, right. I'm a big supporter of that, obviously. But again, like shouting fire in a movie theater, just because you can say something and will say something doesn't mean you should. It also doesn't mean that there's not a consequence. And right. That's the difference, you know?
Yes.
Right. And there's also a difference, too. This sounds stupid to be said, but like, there's also the difference in the freedom of like an individual's like supposed illusion of free will and the liberties attributed to you by your government. Like, you literally, like, you have the physical personal autonomy to shout fire in a crowded movie theater, but you actually do not have the freedom of speech protection to do so. Like, you have the freedom of speech protection to like say a bunch of Nazi bullshit and not just get arrested immediately for saying it, but no one has to like it. But if you do say fire in a crowded movie theater, you will be arrested because your freedom of speech is not protected by that. All the freedoms and stuff that are, this is a little con law 101, by the way, if you don't remember being taught this in high school or college, the way that our Constitution in America is written, the First Amendment and all the rest of the amendments and the way that the Constitution is written does not expressly give anybody, any individual, like the freedom to do a specific things. It's actually the way that it's written, it's restrictions on what the government can do.
Yeah.
So the government, like, so you, what you have isn't really technically freedom. It's called a liberty, which is a thing that the government does not have the right to infringe upon.
Government thought that people were going to end up being way smarter than we all ended up being.
I think it's the opposite. I mean, if you look at the way the not to get completely sidetracked, but if you look at the way the Constitution was written, they thought that they would basically just be able to have like a benevolent, like oligarchic, like Roman Republic, and
Roman
Greeks, baby. But they literally like wrote everything, which is why like you have the the senators and representatives and the way that everything was made so that all these people can just control the country. It's better than kings, but like a person that was previously a peasant just gets to be a poor guy with even less rights, because at least if you were a peasant, if some like random duke came onto your duke's property and like killed your dog, your duke could go to war over it. Now if some like robber baron comes onto your property and kills your dog, you probably have to pay him money for it to wipe the dog off his boots.
Like what happened to when Danny Masterson got, not to get really sidetracked, when, Danny Masterson hide from that 70s show.
This makes me upset.
They think that the Scientologist poisoned Cedric Bixler Zavala's dog
Mars Volta. They did.
He got sued for, like, calling him out and trying to start shit, basically, because, you know, hide for, you know, lack of a better term, assaulted his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so that's the real big threat is Scientology, folks.
Yeah, to bring it all back.
But, like, to get to this, so this is actually getting to, like, the main crux of this movie to me, which is, like, there is this brief glimpse, and this is what a lot of people that try to elevate this movie when they talk about it bring up. There's, like, this brief glimpse that this movie is actually having something to say, which is about the fact that, like, these exploitation movies are art, right? Like, the main thing is, like, this guy is trying to get approved by critics. He takes a critic hostage. The critic refuses to ever acknowledge that what they're doing is artistic in any way. And then ultimately ends up being his downfall. And so weirdly enough, there's a second argument that can be made where either this is supposed to be like a movie, a meta movie about like these exploitation films being art. And then it becomes like this weird, like meta movie about, look, these exploitation films can never be art. So just watch this fucked up movie. And so like it could be read that there's like both ways. That's interesting. It's an interesting concept.
I think that concept is why I do like this movie, though.
I don't know if they meant to do any of that.
Well, so there's two things. One, right, like authorial intent, like who gives a fuck? That doesn't mean anything. Two,
you can intend to write, you know, the great American novel, and if you just rewrite the Denny's menu, you know.
Yum.
Right, and you ordered the opposite. You can intend to write the Denny's menu, and then like you open up the Denny's menu and it's Infinite Jest. And you're like, damn, no more grand slams. just a lot about tennis. That's an Infinite Jest joke for you guys.
Yeah,
definitely our audience. Definitely our audience. You fucking idiots. But
about James Joyce's Ulysses.
By the way, give us money starting next week. but yeah, so there's that. But two, it's like also even if it was intended, even if it's like something where you can kind of see like and get a glimpse, like the rest of the movie is just it's a slog. It was fucking boring.
Yeah, I feel I hope
the little glimmers of there being commentary, especially like there's also another kind of commentary about dirty cops not doing their job.
Yeah.
It's just like there's like little glimpses, but it's never eschewed together. And that's also because the writer and director of this movie, Joel M. Reed, he wrote the script in a day. So,
wow. Well,
which is very shocking, I'm sure, you know?
It's showing.
And he didn't even want to do this film. He had a film about a rock star that has, like, a zombie groupie or something. Like, he just wrote this because somebody wanted a treatment, and he had another idea. And, you know, he did a bunch of B-movies and stuff. Before this, he was a smut director. I cannot...
Really?
I know, shocking. Huh.
Wow.
I cannot find through the life of me what the name was he used as that director.
Dang.
But a little fun fact for you, besides the fact that he is a victim of the Cuomos, he did die in 2020 from COVID in a New York City assisted living facility.
God, Scott.
So just want to throw that out there real quick. Another fun fact, though.
Oh, my God.
He was close friends with actual good filmmaker Oliver Stone, who actually attended the casting and most of the shooting of Bloodsucking Freaks. He was on set for a lot of that. So,
that goes back to the Lloyd Kaufman Oliver Stone connection. Lloyd Kaufman.
Oh, I thought you said Kaufman. I'm like, are we just making up names now?
Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
No, the Lloyd Kaufman Oliver Stone connection at whatever fucking Harvard or Yale, whichever fucking school.
Yeah. So how about we give a little synopsis of this turd burger real quick so people can kind of see where the rest of our thoughts are going to go on this. So we have Master Sardu. He is the owner and curator of a theater of sadomasochistic horror productions, the Theater Macabre itself, which is based on the real life La Theatre du Grand Guignol of the Pigalle district in Paris, France. It's like that theater in this movie, like that's a legitimate thing that existed, except
like a theater that does weird shit.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
Like the Pigalle district in Paris is basically the red light district.
Gotcha.
And one of the big things was that the Grand Guignol would put on these like sadomasochism shows where it was meant to titillate and be naughty and look violent. Do I know a whole shit ton? Like, there were some people killed? Probably. They're fucking French. But that's beside the point. It was an actual. There is a historical basis for this theater macabre.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was referenced at, like, in like the first scene. It's like, this is like a third rate Grand Guignol.
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch any of it.
Yeah.
Because
the dialogue is trash.
Because I was just like, nipples. So
undisclosed to his audience, Sardou, with the support of his depraved assistant, Ralphus.
Oh my god.
Himself a little person that for some reason looks like fucking Luis Guzman.
That's what I said.
Are in actuality torturing to death the women presented on stage, themselves victims of human trafficking, or as it's referred to in the film, white slavery.
I literally said to Scott, I go, is that a real term?
It was, yeah, for a very long time, the idea of human trafficking was bad if it was white women.
Yeah.
That's why it's called white slavery.
That's why
because, you know, we kind of had this thing in this country called slavery.
Regular slavery.
Yeah, normal slavery.
Well, yeah, I was just like, so it only is white people or is that just a term? Like, I just was like, what is.
Yeah, so like white slavery would be like the full flavor, really bad. And regular slavery is like, you know, like low calorie, 3/5 of the, you know, the shame. Like, it's a terrible term that existed.
I don't know what you just said, and I'm not sure if that
that kind of fucked me up, even.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm trying to make a point here. It's like, the fact is, like, that term of white slavery is fucking atrocious, because it insists, when you use that term, that if an indigenous child, a black child, a Hispanic child, if they were taken away, mm-hmm. or they were trafficked, it's not really a crime because they're not white.
Like, okay, I got what you
And mean. Actually, back when, in the formation of the MPAA, we got into this during our exploitation film episode we did a while back. Depicting white slavery would actually, in talking about censorship, get your movie banned. You weren't allowed to do that. But if you had a movie, say, where it was a black woman being traded or beaten, stuff like that, it would be okay.
Literally, what?
Yeah. We're kind of a trash country.
Well, I knew that.
We have a history of doing awful things to people.
I just learn more and more every day. Oh, I'm sick of it.
I know. I want people to learn something from this horrible fucking show. Anyway, we have theater critic Creasy Silo, which is one of the fucking funniest goddamn names I've ever...
I didn't really catch his name.
Creasy.
Like
my shirt's Creasy.
Okay.
And Silo. Like a missile silo. Apparently he was actually based off of a real critic.
Roger Ebert.
Yeah, absolutely.
Robert
Ebert.
I don't know stuff.
So this dude finds himself kidnapped after publicly shaming Sardou during one of his theatrical displays, and he's slowly broken.
He called my dick little.
He barely publicly shamed him. There were like five people there.
Including some of the characters we're going to get to, which is going to be even funnier. So this
he barely publicly shamed him.
Yeah. Well, he gets kidnapped randomly at an art exhibit. Where literally the torture woman opens, like, pretty much has the flasher trench coat. She's got, like, a fucking fake dildo. He's like, oh, my God. And he gets fucking poison darted by Ralphus. Like,
that's how you kidnap people. Take notes.
Take notes. Use a strap on, but not the way you think. Anyway, this dude's stuck in the dungeon, which is basically a charnel house of horrors that Sardou uses to torture people. And then further, another lady in the audience, the ballerina Natasha Di Natale, who's the girlfriend of another member of the audience, Tom Maverick, football superstar.
Was he supposed to be based off of?
Joe Namath.
Okay.
John Madden.
Tom Brady.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
So he's concerned now because the ballerina's been kidnapped and she's intentionally being subjected to torments by watching women getting guillotined and nipple shocked and skull crushed as a means to break her will. We also get one of the funniest scenes and pretty much the most notorious scene in the movie where the doctor appears. It is not Doctor Who. It is actually a perverted physician with a penchant for slurping gray matter.
Ugh.
And they do all of this to her in the hopes that she'll be broken so she can join Sardou's company to give validity to the performances.
Like, when you say it out loud, it just sounds insane. Like, watching it,
I fucking love this stupid movie.
I was like, who cares? Like, the whole time. And now that you're saying it again, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Who cares?
So now we got Tom Maverick. He's joining forces with corrupt New York City detective John Tucci to track down the perpetrators. This is also funny because it's essentially like if, like, I don't know, Ben Roethlisberger is retired and his wife gets kidnapped and he's joining forces with a cop to, like, bring justice to find her. Like, yeah. It's completely ridiculous.
Just one cop.
Also, Tom doesn't seem that worried throughout the movie.
Very nonchalant. He's like, oh, man, I haven't.
Also, when they he calls the NYPD and it's like, this is a recording. We're not in right now.
No, we called 911 and it said the record. I'm like, 911 answering machine? Like, what?
We're not here right now. Leave a message of your crime and we'll get back to you.
Was that a thing? Like,
anyway, John Tucci. They joined forces.
Tucci.
Now, all the time, we still got Creasy Silo being subjected to Guantanamo-esque torments.
Yeah.
And Natasha is basically finally gives in because she's broken.
Well, you didn't say why. Well, the last thing they do.
Well, the performance.
No, before.
Before what
they bring in the other ballerina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they chainsaw her feet off.
Yeah. I literally, when they...
Which they did really fast.
Yeah.
It was like
when you're getting chased by a little person with a chainsaw and in 10 seconds your feet are gone, like, that man is a motherfucking, like,
also,
master sadist if
also,
you can do it that quick.
To be fair, it was very, like, what's the word? Expected. Because when she came in the room, I was like, oh, they're going to chop her feet off.
Yeah, you did call that.
Yeah, because it was expected. Surprise me, please.
So she eventually becomes subservient.
I have a feeling that this movie might not actually be very smart.
What gave it away? So we get to, like, the apex when Sardu's got Natasha. She's ready to perform. She does a very... Again, she is actually in an outfit during this performance that she takes off within 5 seconds and has her titties out.
What was that about? No, but why... Okay, I did want to bring this up. When she's backstage, right? She's in a full-blown tutu in a thing.
Yeah.
And then when she gets out, she's now in a different outfit. Did you not notice that?
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of continuity errors
Which
in this.
It's like, literally, what? And I double noticed it because we were watching it on...
The Last Drive-In?
Yeah. So, and Darcy had the outfit on. So that's why I was like, oh, I'm waiting for that outfit because I was like, that's cute, you know? And then it shows. And then 5 seconds later, now she's in something else. And then she's barely in that. And then she's naked and she's flopping around like a drunk 3-year-old. And the whole point is supposed to be art. Then at least have the art part be good, please. That really made me fucking mad. I'm still mad. Like, I had to watch all of this and then the girl isn't even twirling well. She can't even twirl.
She is not a prima ballerina, that's for
she
sure.
She can't even twirl, folks.
I could twirl better than that and I have a fucked up foot.
And a rod on your back.
Yes. Like, my God.
Anyway, after her bad striptease, she ends up kicking Creasy Silo to death.
Which was stupid.
Which is funny to me.
That was stupid.
That's, like, the most realistic.
They don't even make it seem like he died. I'm like, is he dead? It doesn't, like, confirm. It's just, like, who dies like that? I don't.
Who dies getting kicked to death, really?
From her? She kicked him. She kicked him 4 times.
From her?
Well, yeah. It's a funny thing, too, is that I forgot to mention, is that Stanley Tucci is now trying to get Sardu to pay him to keep the Theater Macabre open. And then he figures out that the dude's got a shit ton of fucking money because we learned that he's selling women to, like, Arab sheiks in one little scene.
Which came out of nowhere. Also.
See, that feels like it's probably the most realistic thing in the movie.
And they said it for 5 seconds and just... danced right over it. Do-do-do.
Yeah, so this dude figures out that, like, oh, this dude's loaded, so I'm gonna get him, I'm gonna throw him in prison, and then I'm gonna steal his money. Mm-hmm. So, in the finale, Sardu and Ralphus find themselves the victims of the women they've enslaved, torn apart and decapitated by the feral sex slaves, which are some of my favorite characters in this movie, because they sound like the Monty Python cast doing, like, women voices. They're just like, ah! Ah!
I also don't...
Because you know how women sound.
Also, none of that made sense, that why they were, what their deal was.
Yeah, you can't sell those women to like an Arab oil tycoon, and they're going to bite his dick off.
And these were cannibals, but they didn't eat each other, and they all had their nails done, but they've ripped human skins, and that girl had perfect red nails. Get the hell out of here with that.
Well, they get freed because Tucci tries to, you know, the treasure's underneath there.
Well, he sees the latch.
And, you know, like all smart cops, the cage of cannibal women, he just kind of walks in and is just like, excuse me, get back. And, you know, he dies. And then everybody else dies except for Natasha Di Natale, who just kind of runs off naked going, Master! Oh, and I guess Tom Maverick survives. He goes out. He went back to play football the next day.
Yeah, he was like, I got a game. the cop bribed me to lose, so.
And that's the movie, everyone.
So the ending was so disappointing. Not that I didn't give, right? I was like, ugh. But it's like all this shit happened, and then it was just like, that was the ending. It was just like, okay. Like, I at least wanted, you forgot the part where they eat his penis.
Oh, the penis hot dog.
Was that funny? Yes.
Yes.
That I'll give that was funny. But they didn't play it up enough. They should have put some, like, mustard on it. I don't know. Put some, like, relish. A cucumber. I like a cucumber on my hot dog.
Any other condiments you'd like to list right now?
No, because that's all you put on it. You don't put ketchup on it.
Well, no, that's a sin.
Disgusting.
So the cast of this movie is kind of funny. And the fact that there is a very depraved individual in real life that was a cast member, and a couple sad stories. So we had Seamus O'Brien as Master Sardu. He was a London-born actor with a penchant and interest in the occult. He worked in English theater and off-Broadway productions. Bloodsucking Freaks was his only film. That's because a burglar broke into his house and he tried to fight back and got stabbed to death. So he died at the age of 44.
Damn.
And his crowning achievement was being in Blood-Sucking Freaks.
Damn.
Yeah. Yikes.
We have Viju Krem, who played Natasha Di Natale.
Beautiful.
Good-looking girl.
Beautiful woman.
She starred in several adult films in the 70s, including Let My Puppets Come, Foreplay, spelled F-U-O-R.
Wait, don't stop.
Motherfucker, you cannot puppets come. You cannot just say that and then just keep going.
Oh, did you look it up?
Oh yeah.
What's the vibe?
Bad.
Is she having sex with puppets?
Well, I'm gonna tell you this. The puppet was Luis de Jesus, who played Ralphus.
What?
So,
oh my god, I know what I'm doing later.
Oh, I'm gonna get into Luis real quick here after we're done. So she starred in Foreplay with the letter F-O-U-R.
Foreplay. Okay.
And Eros's Perversions. She took two between the eyes in a hunting accident and died in 1983.
Yo!
Didn't her husband accidentally
Accidentally shot her. Yeah, so that dude pulled a Dick Cheney, except, you know, got it.
Accidentally, directly between the eyes. Get out of here.
So let's talk a little bit about Luis de Jesus, who's Ralphus.
That's not...
He was a circus performer, that's probably not shocking to anybody, turned actor, infamously an adult actor starring in such films as The Anal Dwarf.
Oh my god.
Let My Puppets Come.
Back to that one.
Back to that. Ultra Flesh.
Okay.
Fantasex Island.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because it's
the plane.
Yeah, his character's name was Poo Poo.
Poo Poo?
And Santa Comes Twice.
Hell yes.
His theater name for adult films was Mr. Short Stud.
Ew.
And his most famous role, however, he did try to break out into mainstream film.
Good for him.
His most famous role was as an Ewok in Return of the Jedi.
Nice.
Joel M. Reed.
Wait, can I ask something?
Yeah. Is this about Ewoks?
No. What's his name? Ralphus?
Ralphus.
In the movie, was he... supposed to be a little different as in terms of like
he's a dwarf.
Yeah.
That's not what
Jenna,
I mean.
It's kind of obvious. Are you even watching this movie?
Okay. I don't know how to say this without being like
simple?
Arsler?
Was he a little touched? Or was that
Well, he was doing a lot of touching.
Or was that like
He skull fucked a woman's head.
Can I finish? Or was that like the vibe of him being subservient to his master?
I'm pretty sure.
I couldn't, because every time he would talk, I'm like, what?
He's kind of got like an Igor thing, like, yes, master.
Yeah, was that just like how they wanted him to play? Like, I couldn't tell.
I don't think the actor was challenged, no. I think
that. No, I didn't mean that.
I think the character is probably like just as broken. Like, I mean, Sardu does call him I think the one set of lines is, but master, if she dies, she can't perform. And he goes, yeah, of course, you idiot.
He calls him an idiot a bunch. That's yeah. why I couldn't tell because it wasn't. I guess it wasn't clear because of what they were doing, right? I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a little bit of clarifications this movie could have used, I'm guessing.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. A little bit. So Joel M. Reed has actually worked with Luis de Jesus, meeting him after starring in The Anal Dwarf. The Anal Dwarf is a really important film in smut history.
Apparently.
Because it was a film of a little person. Performing sodomy. It was
he
like
he performs it, not performing yeah. him.
No, he is not being sodomized. Oh. He's a sodomizer.
It's a damn shame.
Oh, it's a damn shame. So, Luis de Jesus, who was a legitimate freak, was a degenerate
guy.
Not in like a freak, is a naughty naughty freak. For the record, naughty freak.
This is our last episode, everybody.
He was a degenerate alcoholic and famously threw an orgy on the last day of filming Bloodsucking Freaks to the shock of most of the cast,
what?
Including the other adult entertainers. He basically hired and had a bunch of women, and they just used the set, and he just straight up fucked.
That's disgusting.
He was, however, fucked. Reportedly by Joel M. Reed, hung like a horse.
Well, no shit.
A legitimate, like, mini-me, the joke in Austin Powers, where it's like, oh my god, he's a tripod. Yeah. Like, apparently Luis de Jesus was a tripod.
Probably, because that's how he was in porn. That's, like, the one requirement.
And, yeah, he died of a heart attack in 1988. So.
A heart attack?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought you were going to say liver failure.
No. It's got to be weird, because apparently he had a penchant for, like, causing fights in bars. And, like, how do you, like, get into a fight with Luis de Jesus and feel good about yourself? Like, he's shit talking and like
just walk away.
Like, you're gonna punt the guy across the bar. You can't feel good about that.
That seems like something drunk Scott would do. Scott that drinks vodka.
Scott that drinks vodka might actually punt a little person.
Vodka Scott is my least favorite person I've ever met in my life.
Followed by Jaeger Scott.
I've never seen Jaeger.
You've seen Jaeger Scott.
When have we ever drank Jaeger?
Remember when we were at Pierce and I got force fed a bunch of Jaeger by our head chef?
Oh, we did get, yeah, we took,
yeah,
we
Jaeger Scott's not fun.
We took an Uber ride home in silence. It was awkward.
A couple other people that starred in this movie, we had Alan DeLay as Creasy Silo. He's probably the most recognizable person because he was in Trading Places and the second Amityville horror film. Niles McMaster is Tom Maverick, who was a Chicago native, still alive, actually. He was in the other horror movie people might recognize, Alice, Sweet Alice, and in a couple episodes of Barnaby Jones.
Nice. Let's interview him.
I think he's like 80. I don't think he's going to want to talk to us.
All
right. And then, most famously, Dan Fauci, not related to Dr. Fauci. That was Detective John Tucci. This was his first acting role. He would kind of have a minor acting career, but he would become the executive vice president of Paramount Television Comedy and was the personal acting coach to Fisher Stevens, Marissa Tomei, and Ted Danson.
Wow. Okay.
So that guy actually had a career somehow after this film.
Yeah,
and everybody else ended up fucking dead.
Yeah.
Awkward. Jenna, what's your score for this movie?
Oh, my score for this movie... on Letterboxd, I have figured it out more, Steve, for you, since you called me out. I couldn't sleep the other night, so I was up 6 in the morning just fixing it. And to be fair, though, I was like, I'm not doing this the way that they do it, because they're like, I'm doing it on how I want to do it based on my thoughts. So that's how I'm doing it. But this movie gets half a star because Scott said I couldn't give it 0 stars. And my review on Letterboxd is really good. It says hard pass.
Very good review.
Yeah, that's my review of this movie. Half a star, hard pass.
Half a star, hard pass.
Yeah, half a star. It's a half star. It's not good.
It's a half star.
Don't watch it. It's boring. It's not fun. Like I said before, I do think this is even worse than Veronica because
titties than Veronica.
Veronica at least like was fun. I could laugh
at least. Like, yeah, there was more funny
like
parts.
It's so bad it's funny. This was just Veronica. So bad it was bad.
This does have the only thing that's legitimately I don't like in this movie, like in an unnerving way, is when the brain is getting slurped. I don't like those sounds.
I closed my eyes. I couldn't. Yeah. I had to close my eyes.
I didn't like the sounds. I didn't like the color of the brain juice.
What color was it?
Oh, it was like a weird pink, like frothy pink.
It was. They used oatmeal for that. Oh. Yeah.
Like a pink, like Pepto or like dusty.
No, it was kind of like an off red.
Like a dust.
An off red. Yeah.
A lightish red.
The doctor, by the way, was actor Ernie Pischer. He starred in a bunch of episodes of As the World Turns.
He was
very creepy in that film, quite frankly.
He did a good job at being creepy, but it was almost like too creepy. Like, is this really who you are? I don't know. I was getting...
Are you acting or are you just having a good time?
I was getting weird vibes like, what's that guy that the serial killer that women think is cute, which is disgusting?
I mean, most of them have a fan club.
Ted Bundy.
Oh, yeah.
He was giving me just like the hair and the whole thing. So I said, that's a red flag.
Yeah. Big Ted Bundy guy over there.
Yeah. That's his hero.
I'm going to give this movie 2 ratings because I 100% agree with you guys that it is half a star. Mm-hmm. It is.
You don't have to agree, Sky. This could
be your favorite film of all time. I do agree that this is a piece of shit film.
I just think you're stupid.
It doesn't take much. I, however, would give it 3 stars for another reason, because this is a movie that you can have a really fun conversation about. It's a good conversation piece. We had a great little talk here about censorship and films. These kind of movies, and this is a reason why I like exploitation films, is that it really shows how much you can push the envelope of bad taste. You know, is this better than, you know, Ilsa of the SS? Like a Nazi exploitation movie? No, that's actually a better movie. That's a thing. But that movie affected the production of this movie. It was an influence on it. These movies, why I like them so much, is that it does show you what you can do, which is pretty much anything, and with just a little imagination and a budget and really desperate women.
I want to punch you so hard in the face right now, honestly. Like, I cannot. But you know what also bothered me about this?
The frying pan full of eyeballs that I completely forgot unintentionally to remind you of.
Yeah, but then to be fair, I didn't watch him eat the eyeball at first because I was like, absolutely not. But then when the frying pan, I was like, oh, that just looks like glass balls. Like,
yeah.
Like a crystal ball with an eye in it. Like, so that like was fine. But I really like feel like the nipple scene.
The nipple electrocution?
Yeah, I was just like, well, that seems like a good time, you know? Like, she wasn't, none of the girls were selling it. Like, was that on purpose? Like, was that supposed to be?
Most of them were, like, low-rate adult actresses. This.
No. Oh, stop. And I was like, ma'am, you just got your hand chopped off. Ma'am.
Yeah.
You're asking
grindhouse smut film actresses
I could do that, and I can't act. I could scream.
Guys, with the Patreon, please send us money so we can redo Bloodsucking Freaks, starring Jenna as Natasha Di Natale.
Yeah, I'm going to
Steve
twirl.
As Ralphus.
No.
Hell yeah. So you want to know, you know what? I don't know. I never watched the... all the last drive-in with this movie.
It does star Chris Jericho, which does not become a selling point for most people to watch.
Yeah, it was a no for me, but
I'm was a big Chris Jericho fan back from when I used to watch wrestling, but back in WCW he did have a very large definitely a guy that was supposed to be touched, that was like his manservant, and he was named Ralphus, and it was because of this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that episode is interesting. I wrestling does nothing for me.
Well, yeah, he's fine. It's not like, I think he was it seemed like to be a nice enough guy. I just don't care about.
He's Canadian, you know, they're just as fucked up as us.
I hate wrestling and everything that it stands for, and that's my opinion.
You hate what it stands for?
Yeah, it annoys me.
Entertainment?
I just hate it.
I hate fun!
Okay, can I elaborate? Absolutely not. No, that's what I said what I said.
You said nothing, so that's cool.
Well, that's the theme of this week, is nothing and who cares. So
how nihilistic of you. Jenna, where can we find your nihilistic self on Letterboxd? Did you figure this out?
I fix it. Spider X Queen. I have 100 movies logged.
Cider?
Spider. Oh, cider's gross. Spider, as in an arachnid. Okay.
An eight-legged
Did
freak.
Did you say cider is gross?
Yeah, I hate ciders. What One time I went on a date with this guy, and he ordered a cider, and I was like, oh my God. I should have. That was a red flag. We broke up Ciders? A year later.
A year later.
And I never fucking forgot it.
And you know what? You drink cider, you bitch.
Well, I broke up with him, actually, because he stubbed his toe and, like, cried, and I was like, that's enough. I was like, I cannot.
Cider's good, though.
Cider's disgusting. Drink a beer like a regular person.
Why not? Why can't I do both?
I mean, you can do both. You can double fist. I'm all for that.
No. These are my opinions.
These are your opinions.
These are the core values I live my life by. No cider. Be a spider. Oh my God. What's wrong with me?
Oh my God. You didn't even drink during this episode.
I didn't. I'm drinking a Diet Coke.
A Diet Coke.
I had a banana with peanut butter and a Diet Coke. Maybe it's the nail polish fumes.
Yeah, that's probably what you are smelling your fingers right now. Steve, where do we find you or not find you? Do we end this fucking episode?
Yeah, at Rude Speaker on the things. You probably know that already, so go for it.
What if this is their first time listening?
It's hopefully it's not because this episode was not good.
This was fine.
Yeah, no, it was. What's wrong with you?
Oh my God.
We followed the format. You wanted under an hour.
That's what I'm saying.
It.
You guys can't riff. That's it. It was a riff. All you need to go was haha.
Excuse
and then
me.
We can keep,
Excuse
keep
me.
Going.
Actually, no, that's not true. I can. Scott is the one that is not able to do that. So don't start with me.
I'm very literal. You can find me at the Ghoul Daddy on places where you think the Ghoul Daddy would be lurking. And all the stuff for the pod is at Groovy Little Pod. Next week on the 28th, the Patreon will finally go live. We've kind of...
Nice.
So we have a couple things. We have a show called After Hours where we don't really talk just about horror movies. We actually have interesting conversations about other things. So if you like hearing us talk...
I don't know why anyone would.
But... I don't know why anyone either, but it seems to be like we have at least a couple hundred people that seem to want to listen to us on a regular basis, and we all love you very much. Mm-hmm. Besides that, we'll have a little interview show as well called Shocked and Loaded. So if the Patreon, $3 gets you After Hours, $5 gets you After Hours, and Shocked and Loaded, we have a lot of cool interviews set up if you haven't already heard. The first one being Bobby Ling of Pentagram, the Godfather of Doom. We are interviewing him this Wednesday. And we're not really sure how that's going to go. So we're... No, let's just be honest. We're dealing with an interesting person. I'm very excited to talk with him. That will be Schlocked and Loaded only. You do have to have the Patreon to get that. As I mentioned before, with the After Hours episodes, you guys will get access to that a couple weeks after we do them, just because we do want to give you guys some extra content. We kind of discussed maybe doing like a small episode of talking about the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre because it is hot garbage. And I've been accused of not liking fun, which is very silly because we just talked about how fun this movie was.
I don't have to be a part of that, correct?
No, you do not have
Good,
to be a part of that.
Good, because I refuse to watch that.
Okay. Fine. And that's... I refuse.
I was chased when I was a kindergartner by a man with a pretend chainsaw. I feel like I've talked about this before.
I feel like you definitely have not.
You've never talked about this
in my kindergarten class, and it was like a fake one, but they had the noise. It was going zzz, and I ran out the door, and I will never forget it. And I was like, who allowed this? And I've been scarred ever since.
Man, I can't wait to be an educator.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
That's it. Goodbye. Stay groovy. We'll be back next week. Next month, actually. We have a new theme. We're doing like mythology and folklore for March. Steve, did you decide on the first film?
What was
it? Oh, yeah. We're going to do Troll Hunters.
Troll Hunter.
You got to pay the troll toll.
And we will, for St. Paddy's Day, obviously, do Leprechaun. Mostly just to torture Jenna once again.
Great. I love it. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.